නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස සම්මා දිට්ඨි ආනන්ද භාවිතා බහුලී කතා රාග විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති දෝෂ විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති මෝහ විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති ඉති. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing Brahmana Sutta, which is coming in the Magga Sangyutta, which is dealing with Noble Eightfold Path. Basically, we are trying to get some understanding about Noble Eightfold Path, and as a result, I have taken this particular sutta, which is available in the Magga Sangyutta, and this actually related to a particular incident happened in Travati. At one occasion, Venerable Ananda went on Pindapatha in Shravasti, and at that time a Brahmin called Janusoni was moving through the city of Shravasti. So his appearance was so wonderful, and basically his horse charioteer is completely appear white color. The horses are white, the canopy is white, the wheels are white, upholstering is white, and the clothes that they wear also white. The stick that is used to tame the horses also white, their sandals are white. So likewise, all the items, whatever is available there, are all white. So the people have noticed this, and they were somewhat surprised, and they were quite happy to see this kind of a situation, and they admire it, and as a result they say that this is a kind of a divine vehicle, this like a Brahma vehicle. So and then this whole scenario was noticed by Venerable Ananda, and then he came back to Jetanarame, and in a given time Venerable Ananda informed this incident to the Buddha, and he requested whether Buddha can give some sort of a discourse or kind of a preaching which is related to a more divine vehicle. So he has now seen a kind of a divine vehicle which is more material, and it is in this world, and it is run by this Brahmin called Janusoni. But now Venerable Ananda is asking, according to the Buddha's dispensation, is there any dhamma which can be related to this kind of a vehicle? And then Buddha mentioned, yes, it is possible, and it is nothing other than Noble Eightfold Path. So Brahmayana, this Brahma's vehicle, Dibbayana, the divine vehicle, Dhammayana, the Dhamma vehicle, is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. And there he starts to explain one by one. So now we are in the Sammāditti, right view. And right related to the right view, here Buddha mentioned, Sammāditti ānanda bhāvitā bahuḍī katā rāga viniya pariyosāna hoti. If one develops Sammāditti, he is able to overcome lust. Sammāditti bhāvitā bahuḍī katā dosa viniya pariyosāna hoti. If one is able to develop Sammāditti, he is able to overcome dosa, hatred. Similarly, moha vinaya pariyosana hoti. One is able to overcome delusion, moha. Now we are going through sammāditti. So I have taken another sutta which is called Mahachattarisaka Sutta, where Buddha talks about more detail about this Noble Eightfold Path. And there Buddha mentioned sammāditti is twofold. One pertaining to the mundane type and the other onto the supramundane type. The mundane sammāditti Buddha mentioned, Attibhikkhave sammāditti sāsava puñña bhāgya upadi vepakkha. There is one type of sammāditti which is taint, it is with taints, and again it is partaking of merits. And again, it is ripening with acquisitions. It is basically giving fruits as various good results, various acquisitions, various assets. And then next, is the right way, which is supramundane. Samadhiti Arya Anasava Lokuttara Magganga. There is another type of Samadhiti, which is noble, Arya. Anasava, it is taintless. And again, it is Lokuttara, that means supramundane, Magganga, and it becomes a path factor. Now, this is the Samadhiti now we hope to discuss today, because now we already covered the mundane type of Samadhiti. Now, if we consider supramundane type of Samadhiti, so there again we can go to the same sutta, Mahachattarisaka sutta. There Buddha asked the question, Katamacha bhikkave sammaditti ariya anasava lokuttara magganga. Monks, what is this right view, which is noble, taintless, supramundane, and is a path factor? So what is that? Yako bhikkave ariya chittasa ariya anasava chittasa ariya maggang maggasa samangino ariya maggang bhavayato. Now there is a certain special terms mentioned here. So there is a practitioner. So here Buddha talks about a practitioner. We can say as a meditator, a practitioner, and in his mind. And he is actually developing the path, Noble Eightfold Path, Arya Maggang Bhavayato. He is actually developing the path. And as he is developing the path, his mind become anasava chittasa. He is more and more becoming taintless. And Arya Maggang Samangino. So there, he who possesses the noble path and developing the noble path. Now here actually it is something evolving in the minds of the practitioner. Now it is more clear where Buddha giving some sort of an ascending order of how this Sammaditti is developing. He starts with Panya, that is the wisdom, Panya Virya, Panya Indriyang, so that is the faculty of Panya, then Panya Balang, that is the power of Panya, the wisdom, and then Dhammaviche Sambojjhango, that is the investigation awakening factor, and then Sammaditti Magganga. So that is the right view as a path factor. Now these are all, probably you can remember, there are in the Buddha's teaching something called 37 Bodhipakkhiya Dhamma. So it includes four foundations of mindfulness, four Satipatthana, and then going to four types of effort, four efforts, that is Sammappadhana Virya, and then four types of what you call Iddipada, and then Pancha Indriya, five faculties, Pancha Bala, five powers, then the Satta Bojjanga, seven kinds of awakening factors, and then Ariyo Attangiko Maggo, then that is the Noble Eightfold Path. So altogether, all these factors, once we add them, it comes as 37. Now there are Panya. Panya is referring to the wisdom. Now Panya is also an evolving factor, and here Buddha says, so all these evolving, developing Panya is considered as a kind of a noble, taintless, supramundane kind of wisdom, Sammaditti, developing in the practitioner's mind. You can see it's a kind of a developing path. It's a kind of a developing quality. It is not something kind of a permanent, but rather it is evolving, it is developing, it is refining. Now, what is the beginning? So we can say how this development starts. So we can actually now connect to the Vipassana practice. Suppose one is developing Anapanasati, and he is able to maintain mindfulness on in-breath and out-breath, and he is continuing that. So as a result, assume that he is developing mindfulness, and now he is able to continuously maintain his attention on breath. So sato asasati, sato pasasati. So mindfully he breathes in, mindfully he breathes out. I will assume that he can successfully conduct it for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And now fairly he is capable of establishing mindfulness on breathing. Now, there Buddha does not stop merely at the establishment of mindfulness, and Buddha takes us to the next step. So he invites us to see the differences between in-breath and out-breath, and various subtle differences in between consecutive in-breath, in between consecutive out-breaths. So this is a kind of an investigation, this is a kind of examination. Close attention has to be paid in order to recognize these subtle aspects. You know that breath itself is a subtle phenomena. If we are to see its very subtle characteristics, differences, so we need to have kind of a clear knowing, sampajano. We need to have clear knowing, then only we are able to retrieve all this subtle information. So this is the beginning of wisdom, sometimes called as sampajanya, clear comprehension. So once the mindfulness has established, now we need to investigate the phenomena. So as we investigate, so there are various minute details going to be available. At the beginning, everything appears like some one thing as a kind of a compact unit. But as we closely examine, there are probably we may be able to understand it is not a single thing, but it's an accumulation of so many things, so many parts, so many components. There is no compact unit. Rather, it is a dissolved so many components, so many units, so many parts. So this is one aspect of wisdom. And as you closely examine, there again you may understand that each and every minute phenomena has their own very short life. They are all impermanent, transient. So likewise, very minute details, subtle details, one would be able to recognize. Now this is how slowly this panya develops, wisdom develops. So at the beginning we start to examine the whatever the phenomena that onto which that we have established mindfulness. As a result, we are able to recognize various facets. Clear comprehension improves, sampajanya improves. And as a result, we are recognizing panya, recognizing kind of a wisdom in the mind. Okay, there is something called wisdom. There is some sort of a inquiry, some sort of a curiosity, some sort of a wisdom available in the mind. There is such quality. In the morning, probably I have it. Or sometimes in the afternoon I lose it. Again in the evening I have it. So likewise you can even understand the various kind of a variation of this faculty. Say for example, when you are developing mindfulness, you can understand where I am mindful and where I was not mindful. Where was I am unmindful. So you can have that kind of a understand. You can notice where you are properly being able to mindful and where you can't. Similarly, you can understand, okay, there is some quality called wisdom. So where I was able to maintain such wisdom and where I have lost that wisdom. So you are recognizing wisdom as a mental quality, kind of a skill that we have to develop. And that is where it is called Panya Indriyang, the faculty of wisdom. So as a different faculty, as a different Indriya, you are able to recognize wisdom. So there are five faculties Buddha preach, that is saddha, faith, virya, effort, sati, mindfulness, samadhi, concentration, panya, wisdom. So those are the five faculties, and you may able to recognize, okay, sometimes mindfulness is there, sometimes effort is there, sometimes faith is also there, sometimes wisdom is there, sometimes the collectedness of the mind, concentration also there. So they actually, their presence can be recognized. And some one of them probably may even dominate the mind. So that is why it is called Indriya. So they have the capacity to dominate the mind. Now, instead of five hindrances dominating the mind, now we have five faculties dominating the mind. Five faculties are quite useful and beneficial and quite positive. And when they are sort of developed, so they come to the forefront. They are now governing the mind. They are now taking the upper hand. Now, then the panya further develops to panya bala, the power of wisdom. Now, this is a very interesting phenomena happens here. Now, in order to explain that, I'll tell you about the mindfulness first. Say, as you are developing mindfulness, you can understand, okay, there is a quality called mindfulness, and this is the quality, and you recognize from your own mind the presence of mindfulness. And again, you have some idea, okay, these are the areas, these are the times I was mindful, and these are the times that I couldn't mindful. So likewise, you have some sort of a honest assessment. And now you are further developing mindfulness so that you have unbroken mindfulness. Now you are fairly mindful. You know how to be mindful, you know how to improve mindfulness, and it becomes your skill. Now assume, at a given moment, now due to some reason, mind become unmindful. At that time, you are not panicked. You are not that much shocked, because you know the technique. You know that I can re-establish mindfulness. It is not a big deal. Because now you have a fair amount of confidence. You have worked out how to develop mindfulness, and you know the quality, and you know how it is affecting the mind. So even when the losing of mindfulness, during the loss of mindfulness, you are not panicked, you are not shocked, you are not shaken. So this is called sati bala. Pamade na kampatiti sati bala. So when the mind become unmindful or careless or pamade, negligent, even the yogi is not shaken. When the yogi is not become upset, because he know that I can re-establish mindfulness. So he has the confidence. So this is called panya sati bala. Similarly, panya bala, we can say, so once you know that the quality of wisdom, once you know that I can develop wisdom, I have the capacity to investigate, closely examine all the phenomena happening right now. So that quality, once you are fairly developed and you know how to develop it and you are familiar with it, now you have confidence. And there may be situations you are not with such capacity. Your mind again become ignorant. So even mind become ignorant, you are not shaken, because you know I can re-establish wisdom. So this is where the panya bala, the power of wisdom. So now it is further improving to dhamma vichaya sambojjhanga. That is the awakening factor, as an awakening factor. Investigation as of phenomena as an awakening factor, bojjhanga. So there are actually each and every phenomena one can closely examine. So Buddha mentioned, tang dhammang panyaya pavichinati pavicharati parivimansang apanchati. So whatever the phenomena onto which that you have established mindfulness, so you are closely examining it, closely investigating it. You are searching what is there. You have a little kind of a curiosity to understand. So you closely examine it. So this is how the Dhamma Vichaya, the investigative quality of the mind develops. So as you are developing it again and again to upcoming various phenomena, so your mindful, this wisdom sharpens, the investigative quality sharpens. It is not thinking, it's quite different. So it is not kind of a logical thinking, or it is not kind of a rumination, proliferation, but it's a very careful observation and careful investigation. mind may be very quiet at that time. So, by the way, the development of Dhamma Vichaya is not limited to that investigation. So, this is the, we can say, the prime kind of Dhamma Vichaya. But there are other means. Say, for example, you are closely going through a sutta, you are trying to understand Buddha's teaching, you are investigating, you are even mentally analyzing. So that also contributes to Dhamma Vichaya. So now actually the wisdom is developing. Panya is developing. Now, this you can say, the practitioner is developing these qualities. It is not that even if you pray or if you wish that these qualities are going to develop in your mind. Rather, you have to do something. You have to work out. You have to practically involve. You have to practice. So as a result of practice, this wisdom is now developing. Now when it reaches as a path factor, then it is called Sammaditti. Wisdom as a path factor. So the path factor of right view. Now that is that we need to further understand. So what is the path factor as a right view? Now, in order to understand that, let me take another sutta, which is called Micchaditti Sutta. So in order to understand Sammaditti, right view, we need to understand what is wrong view and how it is developed or how it is going to arise in one's mind. So Micchaditti. So in this sutta, Buddha talks about Kisminnuko bhikkave sati king upadaya king abhinivissa micchaditti uppajjatiti. So he is asking a question from the monks. Due to presence of what? Due to clinging to what? By adhering to what? The wrong view going to arise. So he is asking the question. So because of what? Basically, this wrong view going to arise. Then the monks say, Bhante, we don't know. I mean, it is once you tell us accordingly that we will understand. So please tell us. So monks invites Buddha himself to answer the question. Now he is answering. Rupe ko bhikkhave sati rupang upadaya rupang abhinivissa micchaditti uppajjati. So Buddha mentioned, when rupa, the material form, is there, is present, and by attaching to that, rupang upadaya, clinging to that, and then rupang abhinivissa, by adhering to form, by getting into form, and then micchaditti upajjati, then the wrong view arises. So you can see, when in order to arise micchaditti, so there should be a rupa, there should be a form. So that is something important. So without rupa, without adhering to rupa, without clinging to rupa, without attaching to rupa or grasping to rupa, then micchaditti cannot arise. Similarly, Buddha elaborates vedana, feelings. So when there is feeling and when kind of a clinging is there to that feeling and when one is adhering to that feeling, then there's a possibility of wrong view. Similarly, when there is perceptions, sanya, signs, and when there is a clinging to that those signs or perceptions, when one is adhering to those signs and perceptions, then there's a possibility of arising of micchaditti, wrong view. Similarly, when there are volitional formations, and if one is adhering to them, if one is clinging to them, then there's a possibility of arising wrong view. And when there is consciousness, basically here, the established consciousness, conditioned consciousness, when such consciousness is available, and one is adhering to it, one is holding to it, clinging to it, then the possibility of arising micchaditti is there, wrong view is there. Now, we need to be sort of clear that these five aggregates have to be clung to, have to be adhered to, have to be attached to in order to arise michaditti. But on the opposite, if one is able to avoid any kind of an adherence, avoid any kind of an attachment, avoid any kind of a clinging, grasping, then there is no possibility of arising michaditti. So this has to be very clear. So the michaditti to arise, there should be some amount of clinging, some amount of a desire, some amount of grasping, some amount of adherence. And then only the michaditti arises. On the opposite, if we are not attaching, if we are not grasping, if we are not clinging, if we are not adhering, then it is not possible for michaditti to arise. Now, how to avoid then clinging? How to avoid grasping? How to avoid adherence? So this is the point. So then Buddha teaches a path to avoid this kind of an adherence, avoid this sort of attachment, grasping, holding. So this is where the vipassana is quite important, where it helps us to disassociate, it helps us to unentangle, it helps us to detach, avoid any kind of grasping, so that the presence of michaditti is not possible. It can't exist, it can't be available, because the roots are not available. Now, Buddha's teaching, therefore, is to cut through that ignorance, to cut through that grasping, to cut through that adherence, holding. Now, in order to further clarify this, now Buddha questions the monks. Tangin manyata bhikkave, rupang nichangva nichangvati. Now Buddha is asking, monks, what do you think? Is the form permanent or impermanent? Anicham bhante, impermanent bhante. Now, slowly Buddha is now arousing this non-grasping nature in the monk's mind. The relinquishment, dispassion, non-grasping is one key aspect of sammāditti, and now Buddha is developing that. So by questioning and allowing the monks to investigate again and again, now Buddha is sort of developing sammāditti instead of michaditti. So he is in a way destroying the stage for the michaditti to arise. So if this kind of a stage is there, if we have a wrong view, if we have, say, permanence view, if we think that this is so beautiful, if we think that this is worthy, if we think this is really important, then we may go and attach. Then we hope to grasp. Then we want to possess. But rather now, Buddha asks us to look at the opposite, to investigate how these phenomena really behave. What is their true nature? So we want to understand things as they truly are. So this is the process of vipassana in that sense. We are trying to understand the real nature of all the phenomena. Whatever the phenomena that we encounter, that we go through, experience. So those have to be properly understood. Now Buddha starts with the form aggregate, rupakhanda. And Buddha asks, is it permanent or impermanent? Then monks say it is impermanent. And Buddha then say, what is impermanent? Is it happiness, or is it comfortable? Is it pleasurable or painful? Then monks say, you can't expect such happiness, satisfaction, because it is impermanent. Whatever the state that you are happy, not going to last for a long time. In a short while, it may change to something else. As a result, you can't maintain that happiness. As a result, you can't maintain such, you can't expect satisfaction from that kind of a transient, impermanent phenomena. Now, similarly, Buddha talks about Vedana, feelings. Are the feelings permanent or impermanent? Did the monks say feelings are impermanent? So when things are impermanent, can you expect satisfaction? Are they remain the same? No, they constantly change. So then can you expect happiness, satisfaction? Then no, can't expect satisfaction. It can't provide lasting happiness. And it does not obey our orders. They behave to their own agenda and we have no control at all. Similarly, Buddha talks about the sanya, perceptions, various signs, marks. And they too are transient, they too are impermanent. They too are subject to change. They also fade away. As a result, we can't possess them, we can't hold them, we can't find lasting happiness. Similarly, various mental formations, fabrications. So they too are impermanent, they too are transient, they too fade away. So since they are changing, we can't expect lasting happiness. Similarly, various consciousness. So they too are transient, they too are impermanent. So when things are impermanent, you can't have lasting happiness. They are unsatisfactory. So likewise, now Buddha helps to develop this kind of a disenchantment, dispassion. So when disenchantment and dispassion is developed, you can't attach, you can't grasp, you can't hold, you don't need to possess. Because you know it is not yours. You know they are impermanent. You know they are quite transient. You know they are unsatisfactory. You know that they don't behave as you wish. So there is no point of grasping them. There is no point of trying to hold them. No point of trying to possess them. Because they are transient. Now this is the wisdom that one develops. So as a, when such wisdom is present, so mind can't hold things, mind can't grasp things, mind can't cling to things, mind can't adhere to things. Instead, mind starts to relinquish things, mind starts to let go rather than holding. So now mind starts to let go, mind starts to relinquish. As a result, there is no miccha ditti, there is no wrong view. Because clinging is not there, grasping is not there, adherence is not there, holding is not there. If those are not present, then the wrong view is not present. The wrong view can't have its footing because no grasping, no holding, no attachment, no adherence. Now this is how we need to understand. So this sammāditti, right view, if one develops, so you have to have some kind of a non-grasping nature develop in your mind. You have to have relinquishment develop in your mind. You have to have an attitude of letting go develop in the mind. So if such is not developed, we can't say that we have sammāditti. If we are adhering to something, if we are holding to various views, opinions, if we are grasping to various views, opinions and lot of other, say, material or immaterial things, then we can't say we have the right view. Then the quiet possibility is there that we can have wrong view. We can even fight, we can argue. I am having right view, you are not having right view. My view is the correct one, your view is wrong one. My view is superior, your view is inferior. So likewise, we can get on to various arguments. We can get on to various debates. We can get on to various quarrels, wars, because of views. Because we are grasping, we are holding, we are adhering to something. And we think our view is the correct one. Theirs is not a correct one. Theirs are wrong ones. So that very holding, that very grasping, that very taking things too strong itself is a wrong view. That is, that indicates that we don't have right view. So if one possesses right view, therefore one's mind should be fairly flexible. One's mind should be able to relinquish. One's mind should be able to let go, not holding. So this sort of qualities has to be developed in one's mind if one develops right view, correct view, samadhi. Now, so I think these are quite important points that we need to understand. So, as we develop panya, as we develop wisdom, if it is improving in our mind, slowly, all the entanglements, all the confusions, has to be slowly reduced, has to fade away. So the clarity of mind has to improve. Non-grasping nature has to be improved. Peacefulness in the mind has to be improved. Tranquility of the mind has to be improved. So in a way, from various other factors, we can recognize that we are developing samadhi. So the development of samadhi is not that we have only kind of a sharp intellectual capacity. Rather, we may have that kind of a very good intellectual capacity, very kind of a penetrative knowledge, but that is not enough in a way. According to the Buddha's teaching, if one develops correct samadhi, then the mind's grasping nature has to be reduced. Mind has to develop an attitude of letting go, an attitude of relinquishment. So one has to slowly enjoy freedom of mind. Previously we were grasping, previously we were holding, previously we were attaching, adhering. Instead of that, now we are letting go, we are relinquishing, we are non-grasping. So the mind becomes more clear, more peaceful, fairly, in a way, flexible. Now, here in this sutta, Buddha asks that when there is no such kind of yampana nicchang dukkang viparinama dhammang apinikotang anupadaya micchaditi upajjayati nohetam bandhi. When whatever the phenomena, it may be form, it may be perceptions, it may be feelings, mental formations, consciousness, if you very well know that they are impermanent, if you very well know they are unsatisfactory, if you very well know that they are always changing, so when you know that, there is no possibility of grasping. So when you are not grasping, anupadaya, when you are not grasping, is it possible to arise micchaditti? Is it possible to arise wrong view? That's a question Buddha asks. Then the monks answer, no hetam bhante. No, it is impossible. Now, this is where slowly that the whatever the grasping is going to develop, grasping going to fade away, adherence going to fade away, and wrong view going to fade away, and instead correct view, samadhi, going to arise. And there's another area that we can talk here. So there are other kind of perversions which is also leading to micchaditti. So when we are experiencing various things, so we consider them as permanent. Say assume that you are looking at a particular picture, say a waterfall, and you are enjoying it, you quite elated from seeing it, and you think it is there, I mean it is good, it is correct, it is wonderful, and it is permanent. So we always have that notion of permanence, and we always have an idea that I can be happy by looking at this, so that is why I am looking at it, and it is capable of giving me satisfaction. So again, I can even hold it, I can even possess it, I can have a picture of it and take it and put it in my room, I can again and again look at it, enjoy it, so I can possess it. Things are under my control. It belongs to me. So likewise, we have the notion of permanence, the notion of happiness, the notion of self, existing self, and the notion of pleasure. But here, what we have established, what we have misunderstood here is what is impermanent as permanent, what is unsatisfactory as satisfactory, what is non-self as a self, and what is not pleasurable as something pleasurable. Those are called vipallasa, those are called perversions. Chattaro me bhikkave sanya vipallasa, chitta vipallasa, ditti vipallasa. Katame chattaro. So Buddha talks here about four types of vipallasa, and those are aniche bhikkave nichanti sanya vipallasa. So when really, truly things are impermanent, we assumes, we thinks, we wrongly misunderstands that they are permanent. Truly, when things are unsatisfactory, we thinks, we assumes, we misunderstand, thinking that they are satisfactory. When truly things are non-self, we misunderstands, we assumes that there is a self. Similarly, asubhe bhikkave subhanti sanya vipallaso. When things are sort of loathsome, we think that they are quite beautiful. So this is a kind of a misunderstanding. This is a kind of a perversion happens in the mind. So this actually happens gradually. It is not that immediately that it is going to a wrong view. Rather, it starts in a very subtle way. So Buddha say it is starting with sanya vipallasa. At the very level of recognition, assume that there is a form, kind of a sight that you are watching, and there is a sign appearing at your eye, at the retina, and there you recognize there's a kind of an image. But you, instead of properly understanding it as an image, you attribute a name to it, you attribute a label to it. Say it is, she is my daughter, she is my, he is my son. So you are now attributing a name to it. You are sort of personifying it. You are attributing a person to it. Now here actually it's a sanya vipallasa. Because it was a sign, but we misinterpreted it as a person. What appeared in the eye or in the retina of the eye is an image. It happens due to various reasons, but we misunderstood it as it's a person, sanya vipallasa, and we don't even stop there. Now we think about that. Oh, is my son good? Is my son doing well? Is he going to pass the exam? Is he going to get a good job? So we start to think, again and again thinking. So this is where the chitta vipallasa, now it is further rooted in the mind, and again we are thinking on the same terms. So as a result, this previous perversion become further strong perversion. Now it is a chitta vipallasa, it's a kind of a perversion happens in the mind. So now we take it for granted, we immediately consider, okay, this is my son. We don't go to any kind of subtle analysis, we immediately take it for granted, telling, oh, this is my son, he is a good son, he is a bad son, he is a wrong, he is bad, it's wrong. Like whatever the perceptions now being developed, now it is fairly rooted, and we are used to it now. And we don't even stop there. And Buddha say, ditti vipallasa, we can even go to the wrong view. Now we are thinking again and again, not just one day, not just one week, for many several months, many several years, we are thinking on the same way, in the same manner, same pattern. Now such thinking has become one's view. So mind has now conditioned to think like that. there is no way out now. You can't think something else now. You can't now assume that you have fairly developed kind of an obsessive thinking that this person is a bad person. Now there is no way to correct it. There is no way to change it. Even your friend telling, no, he is a good person, he is doing this and this. So even though he appear like bad, he is doing really good things, but you are not ready to change your view. You are strongly holding that view. You strongly hold that he is a bad person. Now this is fairly ingrained in the mind. Now it is very difficult to change. Now that is called the ditti or micha ditti. That is called the ditti vipallasa. The perversion has come to the level of view. So likewise we can understand this micha ditti. It is not that happens immediately. It happens slowly. Starting with the perception, starting with wrong recognition, and to those wrongly recognized phenomena that we are attributing various other parts, we are further thinking on top of that, we are proliferating on top of that, again and again thinking, for long time we are thinking, and ultimately our mind becomes fairly conditioned to some sort of a belief, to some sort of a wrong view. So if we are not doing such thing, if we are not doing that sort of a wrong way of thinking, if we are minimizing proliferation, now we are going the opposite direction. Now we are allowing the mind to calm down. Now we are allowing the mind to tranquilize. Instead of too much thinking, we are now allow the mind to become silent, to calm down inner chatter. Now we are developing non-grasping. We are sort of trying to even recognize properly instead of blindly recognizing, blindly attributing names, labels, persons into our perceptions. Rather, we are developing wisdom so that this vicious cycle not going to impact, not going to enforce. As a result, what happens? Now everything sort of start to disentangle. Now there is no possibility of arising micha ditti. As we discuss in the micha ditti sutta, so there, if we understand the impermanent nature, if we understand the unsatisfactory nature, if we understand the non-self nature, then there is no way of grasping, no point of grasping, not worthy of grasping, not worthy of adherence. So the mind starts to let go. So the mind starts to relinquish. So the micha ditti fades away. Instead, samma ditti starts to develop. So this is how we need to slowly get on to the samma ditti, the supramundane type of samma ditti. And there are a lot more to discuss, and discuss it further on next week. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching. Now I open the session for questions.
So for any new friends who's joining us for the first time, you may ask your questions by raising your hand, or you may send them to me anonymously and I will read them for you. I don't yet have any questions, Bhante.
Good.
Maybe give it a moment.
Yeah. You seem to have cold, Jennifer. Are you?
No, I think it's allergies.
Oh, I see.
yeah. Because the weather here in the States is suddenly it went from 60 degrees to, you use a different system, but basically it's changing drastically from here, spring to all of a sudden summertime. So The flowers are blooming. And my eyes are watering.
I see. Okay. Okay, there are a couple of questions coming on.
So one question, Bhante. Please explain the difference between Sakaya Ditto and Micaccha Ditti.
Yeah. Sakaya Ditti and Micaccha Ditti. So actually we'll take Sakaya Ditti as a separate topic. I didn't touch that today. So basically, as we develop the wrong views, so basically perversions, as we discussed today, when things are impermanent, we consider things as permanent. When things are unsatisfactory, we consider things as satisfactory. When there is no self or non-self, there we consider there is self. So these are, in a way, starting from the very subtle way, at the perversions, as the recognitions, and then we are thinking about it. We are again and again thinking about it, and it comes to as a kind of a conditioned level of the mind. Now, when this is again and again thought and inbuilt to the mind, now we can consider, okay, this form belongs to me, this body belongs to me, or this body is mine, I am the body, or these feelings are belong to me, these feelings are mine, these feelings are me, or I am these feelings, or these perceptions belong to me, these perceptions are I am, or these various formations, whatever the say mental aspects are belongs to me, they are mine, and they represent me, they represent I, and this consciousness, this knowing is me, or they are I, they represent I, they belongs to me. So likewise, we strongly hold these kinds of experiences as me, I am. So this is the development of Sakkaya Ditti. So therefore, in Dhamma, Sakkaya Ditti is explained in 20 ways. Each aggregate we misunderstand in four manners. So 4 into 5 in 20. So 20 ways we have Sakkaya Ditti, the personality view. We attribute a person onto the form. We attribute a person onto feelings, to perceptions, to formations, to consciousness. So, but on the other hand, Sakkaya Ditti can only be understood through, say, at the supramundane level, but at the mundane type of Sammaditti, we actually acknowledge it. We actually feel that there is a person. We actually accept that there is a person. I am the one who did the wholesome task. I am the one who has helped another person. I am the one, say, sympathized to someone. So likewise, there is a belief of I. So that is why it is called Sasava. It has stains. It has ignorance. It has the self view or the personality view. Therefore, when we are talking Sakkaya Ditti, we consider it as a kind of a wrong view at the level of supramundane Sammaditti, but we accept it as something available at the type of mundane kind of Sammaditti. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. So I'd like to invite Mahisha to please ask the next question.
Avsarai Bhante.
Yeah.
I quite, on the surface, I understood the process, what you said today, but the problem that I'm having is, yes, when you meditate, when you meditate, I would say mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in mindfulness, it's kind of very clear, and you can see the thoughts are coming, and you don't have to cling on to everything. And you know, when you're just watching it, it's just fade away. So all that is clear.
Yes,
but the problem that I'm having is when in day-to-day life, when we are working, interacting with people, or when you get a phone call, you know, regarding some work, or when you get a phone call from a relative regarding some issues going from their end, that mindfulness actually disappears, I feel. And then without any knowledge and without any, you know, clear awareness, the things are whole thing actually, you know, kind of jargon things running on the in the head. And we try to find solutions instantly when someone says something. And sometimes it's needed like that. You know, we can't ask people, okay, can I keep the phone and can I call you back? We can't do it all the time. So we have to actually give a kind of a conclusion, solution for that particular issue. So in that cases, I feel I completely lost. And after, you know, after the conversation, then again, my, you know, mind get back to those things that we have talked about. Say, for example, if it's a work matter and someone is asking, oh, something happened, this thing, and then can we do like this? So then giving a solution at that instant and then thinking about, oh, have I done it right? And then getting... Yeah, contradictory with what I am practicing. Did I do the right thing, or why I should, you know, cling on to that so much? And all sorts of, you know, jargon going on in the head. And at the end I was thinking, oh, I must let go of that, because it's not worth for myself to hanging on to that. But again, the next day it comes to the same problem sometimes. Same person calling and say, no, it didn't work like that, so what else can I do? It keeps on going like that, and like fading. I mean, yeah, I feel like that sometimes it's fed up, because it's sometimes things that I have to say is contradictory to what I practice. Can you say for that, Pante? Thank you.
Yeah, so actually, this is where we need to, in a way, balance, where... We know that we are living in a world which is dependent on various conventions, various norms, various customs, various traditions. So we can't completely ignore that and behave as someone special. So that is why Buddha also respect the laws of the country, the values of the people, sometimes even their beliefs, sometimes Buddha respected. Now, say for example, Buddha very well know the trees and plants, and they don't have life. But Buddha, respecting the beliefs of the that folk during that time, so Buddha asked monks not to destroy trees, not to cut even say sapling, or to destroy even a seed. So likewise, he respected those norms, those customs. So likewise, for us also, we have to adhere to these rules, regulations, and all the sort of customs of the society. There are conventions, and we are using them. So those become some sort of convenient way of communication, convenient way of dealing with the society, dealing with others. But knowing that they are limited, knowing that they have limited capacity, knowing that they are merely conditions, they are merely conventions. They are not in a way real. They don't have some essence. There is no any kind of a hard core. So they are merely convenience, ways and means to communicate with the society, to continue the society. So they are sort of man-made conventions. So if we very well know those as conventions, so then we can actually respect to them, and we can actually get the benefit from them. And when we are sort of, say, habitually trying to attach or hold to them, then we can again immediately apply vipassana and avoid that kind of grasping. So this, I am not saying that we can immediately do it, as you have mentioned. When we are dealing with various day-to-day activities, we are dealing with these conventional realities. And sometimes, unknowingly or habitually, we also start to grasp. We also take them real. As a result, we also get into some sort of kind of confusions and kind of even tensions. Later, assume that you come back home and you start to reflect is it kind of tension available in the mind? Is there any kind of ignorance available in the mind? Is there any kind of an entanglement, confusion available in the mind? So there are, probably you can recognize that. Okay, there is a tension, there is a kind of an ignorance, there is a kind of a confusion which has happened because of that conversation. Now you can apply various vipassana techniques, you can simply let it go, you can understand these are the sort of conventional realities. So I have acted as to the best of my knowledge at that time, but there may be various other better solutions. So once your mind become more clear, once you become more and more mindful, there may be another option, another choice available, which you couldn't see at that time. So therefore, we can't say that we every time takes the 100% correct decision. But if we have mindfulness and say clear comprehension, then there is a higher possibility of taking a right decision, rather than in a person who is with a confused mind and a kind of a congested, cluttered mind. He has very less capacity to take a correct decision, to give a right advice. But on the other hand, if someone is with a very calm and peaceful mind, with a very clear mind, so he is in a better position to take a correct decision. So therefore, we need to balance how to live in these both worlds. So we have to live in the conventional world, as well as we have to live in the, say, in the proper, what to say, the correct world or the true world.
Yes, Manti.
Yeah.
I understand that, and thank you for it. One more thing that I would like, when the things happen like that, you know, coming back, when it's finished, it's done, then, you know, it's always the our mind is so much conditioned that it's, you know, giving you chance to look at it again. You know, it's like history. It's all almost history now, past.
Yes.
But still, so, mind is revisiting it and all. So know, that it's is, oh,
yeah.
Is that the right
so
idea?
May I continue?
Like
yeah. So I need to interrupt you. So this is the place that we have to be careful. So instead of giving so much importance to what has happened, now what really happens is, now, when an incident happens, on top of that, we start to, as you said, revisit to that incident. Now, the incident has already happened. It has happened maybe at the office. Once you come back home, so you start to revisit that incident. So, this is something that we have to avoid in a way. Because here, this revisiting starts to take us on for a ride or take us on for a proliferation. And again, it is... these thoughts actually starts to promote a self-view. So, I did it wrong, I did it bad. So there should be a better opportunity, there should be another option, there should be a better choice. So, likewise, again and again, either praising me or either condemning me, condemning a person, there is a kind of a thought process going on. So, this is a kind of a, this is something that kind of a...
There's blaming, like...
Not really blaming. So these second thoughts arising in the mind always have the notion of a self. It promotes a self. So it promotes, I mean, those thoughts actually promotes a self. Okay, you did it wrong, you did it bad. You did it correct. I mean, you are the one who did it properly. I mean, the others couldn't do it. You are the ones who did it properly. So likewise, either praising you or either blaming you. But actually, in both cases, there is a hidden self. All these thoughts conveys as some sort of a self. So this is something that we need to penetrate.
How can we do that, Bhante? Because it, I mean, I know that I have that weakness. I always like take things personally, as well as, you know, try to put myself like, yeah, I did it and I should do it, something like that. I should do it and I should put my hand and I should resolve it.
Yeah.
I should help it. So something like that.
So that's
how
right.
Can I, you know,
that's the thing.
Reduce it or, you know, kind of, you know,
yeah,
get help to eliminate that.
Yeah, that is
process.
Where that is where we have to observe the mind. We have to understand various thoughts. So inside these thoughts, if you if you are able to understand the content of the thought, so actually when it is happening very rapidly, you are not in a position to do it. Then what happens is you become a victim of this proliferation. But they are assume that you do development of mindfulness, say you do some walking practice, etc. So this thinking becomes somewhat slow down. So that you may experience, okay, you are rather than allowing the mind to go on and on, suppose you do some walking practice, anapanasati, whatever it is, then the thinking slows down. Then you can closely see, okay, one thought comes and then another thought comes. So you have kind of a restful environment, clear environment to see each and every thought, because they are now coming slowly, one after the other. Now you can further analyze these thoughts. There you can see, okay, this thought has a kind of an ingredient telling that there is a person. So you did this, you did that. So you did it correct. You are the ones who did it the best. So this is a kind of a self-promoting kind of a view. Self-promoting kind of thoughts are there. So you don't need to believe them. You can simply disclaim them. They are not you. They are not mine. They are not me. So likewise, you have to disclaim these thoughts. Rather than promoting or rather than getting deluded by them, they are merely thoughts. They are constructions of the mind. And if I promote them, then I am promoting the self view, personality view. Instead, you penetrate these thoughts and simply ignore them. You simply disclaim them. You consider them, they are not yours, they are not mine, they are not I.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm deliberately trying my best to do that, because after, you know, getting guidance for so many weeks now. But the problem that I had having is, now I do it, but sometimes when someone, you know, telling me at work, or sometimes they call and tell me, oh, you did this really well, this and that, and try to, you know, praise, because a lot of praising is here in Australia. We have, you know, lots of, even for a small thing, for a child, we praise a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So like that in work, at workplaces, it's same.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do bad, of course, you're getting the blame. But at the same time, if you do even a little good thing for someone,
yeah,
there comes and, you know, praising it. And when it happens, you know, I try to watch on that also, the sounds that I get into my ear. And then I, you know, trying to build up a story around that, saying, oh, yeah, I did because of this and this and this. Sometimes I reduce myself doing that now. I used to do it a lot earlier. And then sometimes, now after that conversation, then I'm coming home on my way. Then, you know, we have travel time. So then my mind gets all those, you know, what the conversations and trying to put me so much up that sometimes I can't control. It's like I was so happy that someone said good about me.
Yeah.
And it's overflowing, like, because I was thinking that maybe I was compressing it so much before, and now it's got an opportunity, and it's overflowing too much that I can't handle it now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come home, I tell to everyone, you know, if something like this happened, and then I'm like, you know, just swimming in it.
Mm.
And for a lot of time, I mean, I waste my hours and hours talking about it and telling it to my family members, and then I think, oh my God, what I have done.
Yeah.
I wasted so much of time,
exactly.
Their time, my time, telling about this. It's useless.
Yes.
And not worth.
Yes.
How can I solve this? But it happens not regularly, but on and off it happening to me,
yeah.
And I can't control. And then after that, I do a self-blame. Oh, what I have done. And I, you know, I repent on that.
Mm-hmm. So actually both, I mean, so understanding that there is no point of talking like this, wasting time like this, and self-promoting like this. So this understanding itself is a good point, because people don't.
But on
because,
the other hand, I'm so much like depressed about it. To
yeah,
be
this
honest.
Is mine now.
Why I'm doing this? Because I know that it's not good.
Yeah.
And why I'm doing this?
Yeah. So thing is, we can't do any kind of a self-negation as well. So it is not that we are trying to do some sort of self-negation, but rather here we understand, so if we allow the mind to too much think, then ultimately we become overwhelmed by that, and self-view going to be further developed, personality view going to be further developed. So as practitioners, we need to have some control. We can't immediately erase it also. So assume that you want to become no one. So I'm no one. So that is another extreme, that we can't artificially do it. So time to time, kind of a praise and all these things helps to have a kind of a positive atmosphere in the mind. But at the same time, we need to have a very good understanding. Okay, now I have a positive atmosphere. True. But I have to work out. I have to work out that there is no person here. So that kind of an understanding, that what we have understood our inside practice has to be deeply rooted. So what we believe as a person, what we believe as a mother, father, a professional or whatever it is, so there are, it's a kind of a temporary role that we are playing. So whenever those self-promoting thoughts are coming to the mind, so we need to understand, okay, I am no point of promoting this kind of thinking, no point of allowing the mind to go through all this kind of obsessive thinking. Why not I disclaim them and allow the mind to calm down? Because then you can enjoy the silence, then you can enjoy the tranquility, then you can enjoy the sort of freedom from inner chatter. So if you are used to, or rather if you allow the mind to enjoy that, then it is more kind of a refreshing kind of an experience, rather than allowing the mind to overwhelm by thinking. So once you allow the mind to recognize the freedom from thinking, freedom from proliferation, then it starts to value that. It recognizes that. So proliferation is the area that we need to really calm down, really avoid as much as possible, because that is one key aspect of Vipassana practice. Stopping proliferation, calming down proliferations.
Yeah, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, you can try.
I understand.
It may happen.
I'll try. It's hard, but definitely. You know, I'll take step by step.
Exactly.
I mean, it's always like, at the end, I feel like I go that far because I lose my mindfulness.
Mindfulness, yes, exactly.
If my mindfulness was there, I would have actually stopped it, because I recognize then, okay, this is going to go too far if I go in that path.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so sometimes if the mind gets weak, that's why it's jumping up to all those things.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Teacher Devi to please ask the next question.
Yes, thank you very much. Bhante, now you spoke about this non-clinging, and trying to not attach now. And then that is by developing the anicca, dukkha, anatta. So it's very easy to see the anicca aspect of most things, Bhante, especially when you are meditating, and also in the real world, because a lot of stuff is meaning material things, not a human being so much, but we can see the impermanence. But I don't always feel, now I'm talking about the feeling of the unsatisfactoriness, Bhante. Even in when I meditate, I can see a lot of impermanence in the breath and, you know, even the body and so forth. But I don't actually, when I see this impermanence, I don't actually feel the dukkha. So I just wanted you to clarify that.
Yeah, actually, it depends on the person. So you can see impermanence and the suffering or the unsatisfactoriness and unself is not that evident. But to another person, they don't much see the impermanence, but maybe the unsatisfactory nature is quite evident. To another person, impermanence is also not that evident, unsatisfactoriness is also not that evident, but the non-self nature is evident. So likewise, those are differences in ourselves. So we don't need to say that we should see 100% impermanence, 100% unsatisfactoriness, 100% non-self. We don't need to do like that. So either way is possible. I mean, if we see impermanence, so inherently the unsatisfactoriness and non-self is very much like understood, but what is prominent is the impermanence. So that is why actually there are in the vipassana. So if one is seeing fairly or properly about impermanence, his way is more towards the animitta. So there are kind of what you call vimoksha mukha. The openings to the freedom is mentioned in the Dhamma. So if one develops more and more, if one's understanding is more thorough in impermanence, he may enter to the freedom through animitta. If one's understanding of suffering, unsatisfactory, is more thorough, he may enter towards the freedom through appanihita, without having desires. So without, because he understands there is no point of desiring. So he let go of the desire and he get on to the sort of freedom through appanihita. And the other part, if one understands there is no self, there is no person here, everything is insubstantial, there is no essence here. So that is the understanding of non-self. So there he is entering into the freedom through called sunyata. So that is why you can see that there are three openings are mentioned, three doors are mentioned because of these variances.
Yes, that's good, Bhante, because I can also experience the sunyata when I'm meditating on anatta and the anicca. But I don't sort of feel this, I just tell myself when these two conditions are present, there is unsatisfactoriness and dukkha, and I just sort of talk to myself really, but I don't see it, but that's okay. Now you have said that's all right.
Yeah.
If you see one or two, then you can go to freedom, so that's good.
Yeah.
The other thing also that you said was that one, when we have this non-grasping, we have the clarity of mind, the clarity of mind improves, the peacefulness and the tranquility of mind improves. Now that is, I experience that in meditation, but in the real world, when you step out as the lady before said, when you go to work and all this, those peacefulness and tranquility of mind just vanishes just like that, Bhante. So I don't know how we can, there is a possibility of maintaining those things. I mean, I suppose if you are in a monastery situation or in a retreat, then that's a totally different setup. But in the real world, we don't always are able to maintain all this peacefulness.
Yes, true. That is true. So that is why it's a kind of a gradual practice. So we can't say that we can immediately bring whatever the peacefulness, whatever the mindfulness, whatever the clarity of mind that we have experienced during our meditation session while we are at office, while you are dealing with the, say, other activities. So, because we may lose mindfulness, we may lose the clarity of mind. So, again,
yes.
again the defilements invade. So, that is the actually the development of the practice. So, more and more we develop, so more and more retaining of that qualities may happen. So previously we lose all what we have developed once we get onto the society, once we get into the office, once we get into the whatever the regular activities of our home, because we lose everything. But we continue our practice. As we continue our practice, to some extent those qualities start to retain. So that retainment further improves. And even when assume that someone is blaming, someone is criticizing, still assume that you are able to retain the calmness of the mind as you develop. Definitely it may not happen within a day. Now I am talking to you and I am also not perfect. I am, when someone is criticizing me, I also get hurt, because still the kind of person is there. Still I consider, I take things personally. So there I need to understand the sort of ignorance available. And there at that very moment I need to understand why I get hurt. What are the causes? Why am I taking these all personally? So likewise, yeah. I need to, as much as possible, at that moment, I should introspect. I should establish mindfulness. I should, rather than looking at faults in the other person, why not look at myself? Why can't I establish mindfulness? Why can't I maintain peacefulness in the mind? So that is somewhere I have to develop.
So that is a matter of
development in a way, practice.
That is a development thing which has to
happen ongoing. In a way, these things are necessary. So these kinds of ups and downs should be necessary. Then only we can properly assess our practice.
Yes, Bhante.
Otherwise, we don't know where we are. Whether we can face some kind of a difficult situation, and so these kind of hardships actually helps us to further improve ourselves.
Yes, that's why the Buddha said it's against the stream, no, Bhante.
Yeah, exactly.
Not easy. I mean, sometimes it can be a bit. You say, "My, I'm practicing so much." And yet these things are happening, you can get discouraged from the sometimes,
No, actually the thing is, these defilements, these kind of taints may not immediately disappear. They have gradual disappearance. So our vipassana practice actually helps to cut through their roots in a way. But still they have some other sideways of popping up. So we need to understand all those other sideways as well, and we have to uproot them, remove them. So those actually takes time. So these kind of hardships actually helps us to see still where I take things personally. So what are the incidents still I take personally. So likewise, we start to have kind of a proper understanding of our way of life, and that is quite necessary, and that is why it is taking long time for this practice. So now, say for example, now even during the Buddha's time, it is not that everybody just by hearing Buddha's teaching that immediately on the spot they become arahants. So they take an advice from the Buddha, they go for seclusion, they spend years of practice. And then they maybe even come to the city and they start to deal with others, further they develop their practice. So likewise, for years of practice, after a lot of practice only they say become arahants or the stream winners or whoever it is. So if we think that immediately we become arahants, so this is a kind of a overestimation in a way.
Yes, Bhante. It's just a lot of we need to have mental strength also, Bhante.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. We have to persevere the situation.
And the last clarification is, you explained the Sakkaya Ditti, but what I understood was, and I just want to clarify that, you said that in the real world, the Sakkaya, the personality view is not a really wrong view. It's only at the supramundane level. Did I understand that correctly?
No. Thing is, what I want to tell is, at the mundane level, we don't have the capacity to, the mundane sammaditti.
Yes.
So lokiya sammaditti. At that level, we can't understand the personality view as something wrong. That is why we always promote kind of a person. So I am a good person now. I helped to that person. So I am reading my records of my good activities. So I am in a way developing a personality view. So that is in a way, I am a good person, by the way. But later, you don't stop there. You start to further develop your insight practice. You start to develop vipassana practice. There you understand, this is not, there is something wrong here. There is some kind of an ignorance here, some kind of avijja here. I should penetrate this personality view. Now you are changing yourself. Now you are in the other side. Now you understand this is a kind of a constructed self. It is not an existing self, rather a kind of a constructed self. Now you start to deconstruct this. Now it is only revealed at the level of, say, supramundane kind of development of the samadhiti.
Right. I understand one thing. Because the question that was put by the person was, what is the difference between Michchaditi and Sakkayaditi? Sakkayaditi is related to personality itself, but
yeah.
Michchaditi is related to the general sort of views. Is that right? Not related, not only the personality view, which is the Sakkaya.
Yeah.
It is the whole type of wrong view. Isn't that right, Mante?
Yeah, actually, when we call Michchaditti, so they are more really wrong and harmful way of conditioning to the mind.
Assume that
we don't believe in karma, we don't believe in that we have to, say, respect our parents or help others or... we discuss about those samadhiti, the mundane type of samadhiti.
So when we are
not even accepting that, so that is really a wrong view.
Got it, Bante. Thank you very much, Bante.
So I'd like to invite Radhika to please ask the next question. And then, Bante, I received two more written questions via chat.
Really?
Did you want to take them or should we take
so,
them for next time?
I'm fine, but... By the way, I don't know about the others because if you all are getting too late, I can take them later. If they are quite short, then I can give a short answer.
Okay. Since we are at different time zones, Mente, so maybe those that need to jump off can jump off and those that can continue to stay can stay. Is that okay, Mente?
Yeah.
Okay. Radhika? Thank you, Jennifer. Bante, can you hear me?
Yes.
My question is, now when I'm meditating, I'm doing Chittanupassana or Dhammanupassana, then if certain thoughts come, I will let it go and I will recognize that this is impermanent, it's arising or passing away, or I might think, this particular thought is Bhante calls vanchini kadanma. It's I don't let it go, or I'll say this is tanha mana buddhi, and I will let it go. But I'm saying, is it okay if in real life, say like you said, you're attached to your grandson or your son? Or something happens, one is sick, your daughter is sick, or something like that, and you're worried about them, and you realize you're attached to your grandson or your daughter or your son or something. I find that if I'm doing contemplations, that it really helps me. So if I'm doing, as part of my practice, if I'm doing contemplation on the four elements, and even if I do for my children or my grandson, the 32 parts of the body, right? Or if that's for Rupa, or if I do even for something beautiful that I see, I do the four elements, like how you were saying, the waterfall, so the same way about the garden or the flowers or anything like that. Or if I'm reflecting on certain sutras, like I reflect often, I like the Madhupindika Sutra and how cause and effect, or the Matipsamupada, and I contemplate on it. I find that really helps me in the meditation. It really helps me overall. So is it okay if, as part of my practice, I mix both and do a lot of reflection and also do the... breathing awareness with establishing the mindfulness and then moving to
Japan Vipassana. But if I also find that it's so beneficial for me to go through the sutras and reflect on it, go through even like how the Noble Eightfold Path, going through the current karmas and the effects, that really inspires me. Is it okay if I do that too? Because you said don't think too much. And I do, if I do the contemplation, I find that I find it better to, or easier. But if I don't, I get kind of bored, the whole practice. And,
yeah.
And
so you get bored, right?
If I have that balance, mm-hmm. and sometimes I do metta, so I just do metta.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just, or happy that, you know, somebody is not feeling well and they are so far away and this COVID and everything, and I think, oh, what can I do? And then I will do metta, and then I feel that I have done something, so that I just don't think about and worry about it. I think, okay, I've done what I can.
Mm-hmm.
Or there is a thing in Sri Lanka and I can't do anything except order some flowers because we can't go now. Right?
Hmm.
So I have found that this contemplation, metta, together with mindfulness is helping me better than just only doing mindfulness. It makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So is it right? Because then I'm doing a lot of reflection, lot of sutra analysis. Is that all right?
Yeah, actually, so those, just before your sitting practice, just before your say walking practice, you can do sort of that reflection and motivate yourself and sort of arouse kind of a happiness, calmness in the mind, and then you have to allow all those reflections, all those thinking to completely calm down and to approach mindfulness with an entirely calm down mind. So
okay.
So basically,
it should be always before the meditation?
Yeah, before meditation, say if you assume that you are in a confusion, you are in a kind of a, say, bad mood. So on such situation, assume that you take a proper, say, sutta or kind of another metta or whatever it is, and then again you apply that, and again you are able to calm down yourself. Again you are able to establish mindfulness.
After that I feel very good then.
Yeah.
And then
you start your mindfulness practice. So there you give more prominence to calming down of thinking. So you are sort of reducing inner chatter. You allow non-thinking or non-proliferation, allowing the mind to silently observe. So that is more profound than thinking and kind of recollections and all these things. So both are valuable, both are useful, but the second one, that is the silent observation, is more penetrative and more up to wisdom.
Develops wisdom more.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So Buddha talks about it. I mean, he talks about that there are one kind of concentration which is with applied mind, vitakka and vichara, and the sustained mind.
Yeah.
There's another type of concentration which is free from vitakka and vichara, from applied mind and the sustained mind. But it is a very calm, very profound kind of thing. So likewise, Buddha explained not in terms of only in the samatha practice, but even in the vipassana practice, Buddha mentioned, so this silent observation, this very careful analysis, careful observation, investigation is more profound than that thinking type of, say, practice.
Yes.
But you can take the help, you can take the advantage.
What I found is when I stopped that type of thing, I wasn't doing as well in my mindfulness at all.
Yeah, no, the point is another thing is assume that you involved in mindfulness practice. So while you are in the sitting practice, say for example, say after 30 minutes, you are able to completely calm down. Say I'm giving a scenario. Say after 30 minutes, you become completely calm down.
So there are no thoughts, there are no inner chatter, there are no feelings or anything coming up and down or bothering you. So everything is completely peaceful. So at that time, it appears like boring. So here also, if you start to analyze, if you start to contemplate, if you start to reflect, if you take a sutta and analyze, then it is entirely wrong.
Yes, no, that's not what I mean.
Yeah.
That's not what I think.
Correct.
What I'm saying is that it's like as if I have two practices.
Right. Then fine.
Meditating early morning, right? It's a different thing. It's, I don't go and take a sutra and do it like that.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
But I'm like how the lady before said, you know, she gets a call and something happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like I got a my mother's brother passed away in Sri Lanka, and there's nothing I can do. We can't go, we can't, you know, we're going.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a message like that.
Mm.
But I find that if I read a sutra and I just read, I can then get really inspired by certain sutras, and I'm really contemplating on that and contemplating on death or you know, thinking of the positive things. Okay, I can't do this, but I can do this.
Yeah.
So I find that is really good. If
definitely.
I'm thinking, oh,
yes.
I can't go, you know.
Yeah.
I can't go, I can't do anything. What am I supposed to do?
Yes.
You know? So that way,
yeah.
I just took that example because this just happened, right? But even if it's not that, anything else, right? If there is a thing about we can't go now, so I haven't seen our grandson for a year, then I just the phone, and then I just think of how much I'm missing him.
Mm-hmm.
Then I just use this contemplation.
Yeah.
And that me a lot.
So that helps. Definitely helps. So basically, we need to have some sort of a positive atmosphere in the mind. So I mean, always reflecting Buddha's teaching and sort of understanding that, and reading and all these things actually helps. Definitely helps.
Yes.
So there is no harm in taking advantage from that.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Because I stopped all that at a time, and I found that I'm getting worse.
Uh-huh,
you know.
Yes. So balance it. So you start. You need to balance it. So assume that you do every day thinking, contemplating, reflecting, reading, listening, and all these things without calming down the mind, without quietening the mind and developing mindfulness. Then it is not balanced.
No. See, I understand.
Yeah.
Thank
so if you are able to balance it, then it's quite
other
good.
Way.
Yeah.
I stopped all the reflection, stopped all that, and was trying to do only the anapanasati, and I was finding that I'm getting very bored during the whole day.
Mm.
You know, not only the meditation time, but even the rest of it, I was not getting inspired.
Mm. So that's a point. I mean, you need to balance it. Actually the mindfulness practice, vipassana practice, really helps to calm down. So if we continue to consider it as kind of a boredom, we are not allowing the mind to settle. We want always mind to get agitated. So that we need to balance. We can't. I am not telling that you always have to keep the mind entirely on silence, entirely on calm down atmosphere. It is not possible. As you said, you need some amount of motivation. You need some amount of, in a way, agitation. But you need to balance it. So the agitated mind has to be reduced. Calm down mind has to be improved.
Right.
So that side has to be developed in your practice.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, welcome. So,
it's well over 11 o'clock. I've
exactly.
already recorded the two questions that we didn't get to, so
okay.
perhaps we can take
yeah,
them
we'll
back.
Take them the next time. Yeah.
Okay.
So, we'll wind up for today. So, I'm sorry for keeping you awake for a long time into the other side of the world. So, actually, we have spent almost more than 1.5 hours. So with today, actually, we are able to discuss several suttas and again have a good discussion, interactive discussion. With that, we have accumulated a lot of merits. and let's share these merits by reciting traditional verses. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha cha bhummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu.